I have achieved enough. Here I have before me a carefree old age and should enjoy it in peace. With these words to his close friend Eusebius Mandachevsky, Johannes Brahms announced his retirement from composition. The year was 1890, and despite having just enjoyed a successful premiere of his second string quintet, attempts at other large-scale works were proving fruitless. Indeed, just 1 year later, whilst holidaying in a favourite spot of his, Bad Ischl in Austria, he would write his will, seemingly preparing for death. However, despite his public pronouncements, a chance encounter at a concert would reignite his creative fire, inspiring him to compose some of his most intimate, reflective, and melancholy works. This is the story of a friendship between the aging Johannes Brahms, whose compositional style seemed at odds with the changing world around him, and the young Richard Mühlfeld, virtuoso clarinetist of the Meiningen Hofkapelle. Almost 40 years previously, in 1853, Brahms had met Robert and Clara Schumann for the first time. Clara would become his closest confidant, and whilst their deep friendship has been subject to countless articles and rumours, their letters provide great insight into Brahms's innermost thoughts and struggles. During this first meeting, the 20-year-old Brahms played some of his own compositions for them, leading Robert Schumann to declare him the true heir of Beethoven in his publication, The Neue Zeitschrift für Musik. This pronouncement brought overnight fame, but also a weight of expectation that would follow him his whole life. At the time, classical music in Germany was dominated by debate on the way forward. The new German school, championed by Richard Wagner and Franz Liszt, argued that programmatic music, music telling a story and pushing harmonic language further by embracing jarring dissonances, was the correct course. Much of this music comprised of large symphonic works and operas. On the other side was Johannes Brahms, whose view was that music should be a pure art of self-expression. His own style was rooted in traditional counterpoint and harmonic progression, paired with melodies of ambiguous meters and polyrhythms. A perfectionist to the extreme, he frequently destroyed drafts of music and laboured for a decade over his first symphony, premiering it only in 1876. By this time, Richard Wagner's Tristan und Isolde, which had revolutionised Western classical music through the famous Tristan chord and unresolved harmonic cadences, was already 10 years old. So rooted in the style of Beethoven was this first symphony that conductor Hans von Bülow nicknamed it Beethoven's Tenth. Von Bülow, whose wife Cosima later married Wagner after an affair, became a leading proponent of Brahms, conducting his music frequently and exchanging numerous correspondence with him. It was this friendship that would first lead Brahms to Meiningen, a town in modern-day Thuringia, Germany, then capital of the Duchy of Saxe-Meiningen. Previously Hofkapellmeister in Hanover, von Bülow was forced to resign following a fight with the tenor, and so to Meiningen he went, where he built the orchestra into one of the finest in Germany. Brahms's music found a home there, and it was here that the first reading of his second piano concerto took place, with the composer himself playing. Over the coming decade, Brahms returned frequently, and there in March 1891, heard the clarinetist Richard Mühlfeld perform Weber's first clarinet concerto. Writing to Clara Schumann, "Nobody can blow the clarinet more beautifully than Herr Mühlfeld. So enamoured with this performance was he that all thoughts of retirement faded." two works for the clarinet, a trio and a quintet, swiftly followed. The trio, written for clarinet, cello and piano, was an unusual combination, previously used only by Beethoven. It was the same story with the quintet. 100 years had passed since Mozart had composed a similar work for Anton Stadler, and Brahms, ever with an eye on tradition, drew on the very same structure of four movements, ending with a theme and variations. The quintet is a melancholy work, autumnal in colour, full of yearning and regret. Of particular note is the slow second movement, which calls for two distinct characters from the clarinetist, one serene and elegant, the other virtuosic, wild, and almost improvisatory. The music scholar Bruce Adolph theorises that these characters are based on two important violinists in Brahms's life, the aristocratic Joseph Joachim and Eduard Remini, the Hungarian virtuoso with whom he toured as a teenager. Reflecting the deep friendship and bond between Brahms and Mühlfeld, two further complex works for the clarinet would be written. Before that, however, his final works for piano. Composed in 1892 and 1893 during his summer retreats in Ischl, they comprise of 20 short pieces, grouped into four separate opus numbers. Clara Schumann praised them in her letters to Brahms, calling them wonderfully original piano pieces, and exclaiming how remarkable it was that he was able to convey such a wealth of sentiment in the smallest of dimensions. With a nod to tradition, they are composed in the A-B-A ternary form, typical of character pieces. Curiously, however, is a common thread that runs through them all. Of the 20 separate pieces, 14 are entitled Intermezzo, with both Opus 117 and 118 finishing with this. Is there a special meaning in this word for him? Philipp Spitte, close friend and renowned Bach scholar, certainly thought so, and in a letter to Brahms states, Intermezzo, or intermediate pieces, have preconditions and consequences which, in this case, every performer and listener must sort out for himself. In the final intermezzo of the Opus 118, we get the sense of a man pondering death. The Dies Irae theme, used by countless composers before to symbolise death and despair, appears here in an incomplete form. Generally used bombastically, here it is subtle and delicate, more an inner meditation or reflection than outwardly dramatic. Although perceived as introverted and difficult by some, many contemporaries hold these works in high esteem, with critic Eduard Hanslick calling them monologues that he conducts with himself and for himself on lonely evenings, in defiantly pessimistic rebellion, in brooding ruminations, in romantic reminiscences, at times in dreamlike wistfulness. Philipp Spitte went further in a December 1893 letter to the composer, proclaiming them perfect for slowly absorbing in solitude and tranquility, not only for reflecting about the past, but also for envisioning the future. He underlined, "Whoever still has so many new things to say to the world should not think of ending soon." Alas, only three more works would be composed. First would be the clarinet sonatas, the first major works of this kind for the instrument. Although sonatas by French composers François Devien and Jean-Javier Lefebvre existed, they are incomparable to these complex, deep works, whose interpretation is a life's work in itself. Unusually, although the two sonatas are in two different keys, they share an opus number, and much of the thematic material of the second is drawn from the opening lines of the first. rarely for Brahms, who frequently destroyed early sketches of pieces, some remain of two movements. Like the piano pieces that preceded them, they were also composed during a summer initial. In August 1894, he invited Richard Mühlfeld to join him there, adding, "It would be really wonderful if you brought your clarinet with you, and if you were in no great hurry. If everything goes well, there will be two modest sonatas with piano." The first private performance took place shortly after, with both Clara Schumann and Josef Joachim in attendance. Deeply impressed by the playing of Mühlfeld, Clara Schumann stated, "This man plays so wonderfully, he might have been specially created for your works." A public tour soon followed, with one Leipzig critic writing, "The music that the master gave us in his two sonatas eschews, probably intentionally, pleasing the masses. The sonatas will be all the more appreciated, however, by all those who understand their inner beauty and splendour. They are offered a wellspring of the purest joys." Eduard Hanslick went one better, proclaiming the E-flat sonata delightful, with "a theme that seems to have fallen from heaven, or better, wafted over from the most beautiful youthful days, full of sweet infatuation and ecstatic bliss of love." Thirty years previously, when composing Ein Deutsches Requiem, Brahms had broken with the tradition of using the Latin text, drawing instead from the Lutheran Bible. For his final published work, the Four Serious Songs, he returned once again to this source. In the preceding years, a number of close friends, including Hans von Bülow, Philipps Bitte, and his own sister, Elise, had died. Brahms himself was suffering from the very first symptoms of liver cancer, and also weighing heavily upon him was the condition of Clara Schumann, who, having recently suffered a stroke, was gravely ill. Thus, fragile mortality and death loom large over this work. Although drawn from the Bible, Brahms pronounced these works serious, not sacred in character. Pondering the very nature of existence, the Vier Ernste Gesänge, Four Serious Songs, begin with a mood of despair, stating, "Es fährt alles an einem Ort, es ist alles von Staub gemacht und wird wieder zu Staub." All go unto one place, all are of the dust, and all turn to dust again. Throughout the four, there is a progression towards hope, love, and acceptance, with the final song ending, "Nun aber bleibt Glaube, Hoffnung, Liebe, diese drei. Aber die Liebe ist die größeste unter ihnen." All that remains is faith, hope, love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. The harmonic language perfectly mirrors this philosophical journey, beginning in a dark minor key and progressively becoming more major and hopeful. They come to rest in E flat major, just like the second clarinet sonata and final piano pieces that precede them. A final homage to his musical heritage of Bach and Beethoven followed, with 11 choral preludes. Full of complex counter-melodies and harmonies, they were written following Clara Schumann's death and remained unpublished during his lifetime. Fittingly, his final piece is entitled O Welt, ich muss dich lassen. O World, I must leave you. Appropriately, Richard Mühlfeld, the man who had reawakened the creative spirits in Brahms, was there at the end. After hearing him perform Weber's clarinet quintet, the two men dined together, and 9 days later, on April 3rd, 1897, Brahms died. Buried in the Zentralfriedhof in Vienna, he rests next to two other titans, Ludwig van Beethoven and Franz Schubert. In contrast to the ever-increasing forces demanded by contemporaries like Wagner and Bruckner, all of Brahms's late works are for small, intimate groups. Remaining faithful to the old structures of harmony and counterpoint, yet innovating within these tight constraints through complex striking dissonances, polyrhythms and ambiguous meters, he stood at odds with the world around him, new and old at the same time. It is those very qualities that ensure his enduring appeal. Looking back at this late creative period, one is left wondering, if he had never made that fateful trip to Meiningen and met Richard Mühlfeld, would he ever have taken up his pen again? Would we perhaps be left without some of his most profound, intimate and heartfelt works? For a composer so associated with melancholy and regret, what a final, heartbreaking tragedy that would have been.